Okay, during the break, somebody reminded me that this primitive part of us hides in us. And we have to notice all the little ways in which we see ourselves retaliating. And Ginny, during the break, also reminded me that so many of us were brought up with the story that is full of retaliation, that Adam and Eve did something wrong, so they would have to be punished by being exiled from the Garden of Eden. And then also that Christ would have to die to make up for their sins. That also has the same elements of retaliation. All of that way of looking at it has to go in favor of a more spiritual and mystical perspective that moves us from seeing everything from the point of view of punishment and retaliation to God is love. So those three words are the central words in the whole Bible. And if you start with those, then you would let go of the mythological ways of describing how we got to be the way we are. You would want to move in a whole new direction. Or as Thomas Merton says, God is mercy upon mercy, rather than carefully checking what sins you haven't paid for yet, so he can punish you in this life or the next. Also, I wanted to share this poem that I thought of during the break. This is by Adrienne Rich, an American modern poet. And in this, she describes the situation of the woman who has been abused for so long. And in this poem, it's the accent is on how the letting herself be put down by her husband for so long took away her own lively energy. It's called On Jennifer's Tigers. The word screen in the poem refers to a folding screen that you use to separate two parts of a room. And on this screen is a painting of tigers in India and hunters, a tiger hunt. They're hunters behind the trees and they're aiming their arrows at the tigers. On Jennifer's tigers prance across the screen, bright topaz denizens of a world of green. They do not fear the men beneath the tree. They pace in sleek, chivalric certainty. On Jennifer's fingers, fumbling through her wool, find even the ivory needle hard to pull. The massive weight of Uncle's wedding band sits heavily upon Aunt Jennifer's hand. When Aunt is dead, her terrified hands will lie still ringed by the ordeals she was mastered by. The tigers in the panel that she made will go on prancing, proud and unafraid. So she herself had these tigers in her. She painted them, but she was so weighed down because she didn't know how to say ouch and open a dialogue or forsake the premises, she wound up losing all that. That's the danger psychologically. So the grace would be to say to yourself, wait a minute, I had those tigers inside and I want to keep them alive. And so I need to do whatever it takes to make sure that happens. So we're on to the topic of how we open ourselves to grace. And of course, the first way is to look for it. Look for the ways in which it's happening. What is the grace? It's the special gift that you didn't cause or earn, that just comes naturally to you. And some of the qualities of openness I have on page 143. Playfulness, presence in the here and now, confidence that you have a goodness and creativity inside you, no matter what happened to you in the past, that hasn't gone away. Being inclusive toward others rather than who's in, who's out. Letting go more and more. I give the wonderful quote by Master Eckhart, a mystic, Dominican mystic, medieval times. Everything is meant to be let go of, that the soul may stand in unhampered nothingness. Everything is meant to be let go of, so that you can stand in unhampered nothingness. In other words, there'll be nothing left of ego in you. And the first way to let go of ego is to stop playing its favorite sport, which is retaliation. And greeting of the events that happened with the kind of unconditional yes. A central way of moving in the direction of grace and opening to it is showing gratitude. So this is a quote from Brother David. The gifts or blessings of life are always there, but if we're not aware of them, they don't do much for us. That is where gratefulness comes in. Gratitude makes us aware of the gift. So if you were to, you know, start the day with, what do I have to be grateful for? It opens you to the possibility of grace. You remember the famous prayer in Alcoholics Anonymous that about serenity to accept what can't be changed, and so forth. So I put it together here on page 155 at the top. So recite the prayer this way, which is more like the way it was originally written by Reinhold Niebuhr in 1943. May I open to the grace of serenity to accept the things I cannot change. Instead of God, you know. May I open to the grace of serenity to accept what can't be changed. May I open to the grace of courage to change what I can change. May I open to the grace of wisdom to know the difference. So that acknowledges the grace dimension of it. And a practice is not about acquiring graces, but about opening to them. So I'm on page 155. Our part is to identify and clear away some obstructions. So what gets in the way of grace? We prevent ourselves from access to the grace of serenity. I'm going to take each of the three now and show what gets in the way. What gets in the way of opening to the grace of serenity is to be all caught up in dramas and to be living for an adrenaline rush and to put up with stress and exhaustion at work or in relationship with no let up. So when you're doing one of those three things, you're preventing the grace of serenity from coming through. What are the three things? First, you're all caught up in drama. He said, she said, I was right, you were wrong. I can't be wrong. I can't apologize. I have to be right. All of that obviously gets in the way of the serenity. Making the choices for keep everything at a fever pitch, everything is way too important for you. One of the things I've been noticing both in my own life and in therapy, and I've been saying this at times to clients, for instance, a client will come in and talk about the same person every time. And I say something like this: do you think you're giving a bigness to that person that takes away your own power? How are you making that person so big in your psyche that you're losing touch with yourself? That would be, giving somebody that bigness would be an example of bringing drama into your life. And if whatever you're doing makes you so exhausted at the end of the day and there's no let up, then that can't really be right. So you would no longer tolerate that. Try to find a way around that. When it comes to the courage, we lose contact with the grace of courage when we have to play it safe, never put ourselves on the line for what we believe in, hide our true feelings, don't take a stand for or support those who deserve our support. And finally, we foreclose on access to the grace of wisdom when we live in illusion rather than align ourselves to reality. Our challenge as humans is to keep adjusting our relationship to reality until our thoughts, beliefs, and choices match it. Wouldn't that be a wonderful thing to achieve? In other words, to what extent am I walking around with illusions? One of the main illusions of the ego is, of course, entitlement. I'm entitled to special treatment. So when I let go of that and I come from a place of humility, I'm no longer losing touch with the real wisdom, which is to take things as they are. Okay, questions about any of this part?
I just want to offer a thought in response to your, when you began this second hour, you were talking about grace being something that you have to kind of watch and wait for, that
yes.
You can't go out and will it, in other words. There's a very similar thing that goes on in the world of people that call themselves birders, people that are bird watchers.
Oh, yeah.
See, they go out with their binoculars and they start looking. And sometimes they don't see anything. And one of the tricks of a birder is to kind of quietly sit, wait for them to come. And sometimes there's even a way to humor birds. It's a funny word. It's called pishing. Have you ever heard that word before? It's not the one P-I-S-S, it's P-I-S-H-I-N-G-S.
Yeah.
Pishing is when you stand in front of a bush, you know, as a birder, and you make this kind of nondescript noise that is almost a prayer. It goes like this. Psh, psh, psh. Any of you ever do pishing when you're out birding? Yes, I see a couple of heads nodding, you see. There's a few people that know this secret. So if you want the Holy Spirit or grace to come, maybe you should go, psh, psh.
Okay, we'll add that to our list of practices. Yeah, it's like he reminded me of a statement by Thoreau in Walden Pond. When he was at Walden Pond, he said, "I in the as I'm walking along, I don't see many animals, but if I sit in one place, they start to come out and look at me. I see that as a metaphor. When I enter a contemplative space, when I'm just sitting in the silence and I'm just open to what might come across my ken, then more comes out to meet me. So there's something about our being present even that opens us to grace. Now, one last obstruction to grace is fear. Some people have a fear of grace because it will put them on the spot, place them on the platform, and require that they take some kind of an action. So there is such a thing as being afraid of grace. I thought of this once. I said to myself, I thought of St. Joan of Arc, you know, being burned at the stake for her beliefs. And I said to myself, I don't want to ask for the grace that she received. I'd rather have the grace like of St. Bernard, who just stayed in a monastery, had a happy life, have a happy death, study, give sermons. So you want to ask yourself, like, what are the graces that I'm really open to? And think of the various saints that, if you come from our Catholic tradition, we have so many saints to pick from. Just think of the ones that appeal to you and ask yourself, would I want to have the same grace that that saint had? Would I want to live the kind of life he or she lived? And it isn't necessary to want all the graces that everybody had. You can have the ones that you would like. Also, I want to share this other poem, which is in your book. And it's by George Herbert, who is an Anglican priest, 18th century. And in this poem, he is visited by Christ, or you might say an angel of love. And the poem is a little conversation between the two of them. So I will recite the poem and then I'll explain a little about it. The word meet, M-E-A-T, refers to the body of Christ, the Eucharist. Love bade me welcome, but my soul drew back, guilty of dust and sin. But quick-eyed love, observing me grow slack from my first entrance in, drew nearer to me, sweetly questioning if I lacked anything. A guest, I answered, worthy to be here. You shall be he, said love. I, the unkind, the ungrateful, my dear, I cannot look on thee. Love took my hand, and smiling did reply, who made the eyes but I? True, Lord, but I have marred them. Let my shame go where it doth deserve. You must sit down, said love, and taste my meat. So I did sit and eat. So the poem gives you wonderful information about the whole experience of grace. First of all, it begins, love bade me welcome. In other words, I didn't do it. Something came to me, welcoming me. But I didn't believe that I deserved this grace. So I pulled back, and grace noticed it and said, "Let me help you." And the whole thing was leading toward ultimately sharing in grace so that you actually partake of it. So the Eucharist, partaking of the body of Christ, it's like saying, this is not about a dialogue between us, which the poem presents. The poem presents a dialogue. Love says something, the poet says something, they go back and forth. But the poem ends by saying, wait a minute, I'm going to take you beyond dialogue. Now you will actually be partaking of me. You will be bringing me into yourself. When he heard this, he does something very interesting. He says, so I did sit. He stopped where he stopped moving, and he just sat. He went into the calm, silent presence of contemplation. And he brought in to himself, I did eat. I actually am eating the one who's talking to me. So in this way of describing it, grace is something that becomes part of us. We bring it into ourselves. It's not something that we're standing and looking at that's outside of us. The poem is suggesting that more can happen than just meeting up with grace. Like we meet up with people who are conduits of grace. But the poem promises more than that. It says, you will actually bring grace into yourself. Something like the traditional teaching that when you receive the Eucharist, you receive sanctifying grace. Grace is in you. But I'm making it a little even more bodily, embodied, that grace becomes embodied in us and we start to act from it. This is how, and all of this is leading to my other part of the topic, this is how we become, shall we say, catalysts or channels of grace to others. So if you stop to think of it, if you look back over the story of your life, there have been so many times when you did something or said something or became present in a certain way that brought grace to someone. And that is a wonderful thing to have gratitude for. I'm thankful not only for the graces I received, I'm thankful for the graces that have come through me. And St. Bernard says, a loving person is not a reservoir, he's a channel. So it's not as if you gather all the water and keep it to yourself, reservoir, reserved just for me. It's that you somehow become a channel so that in our topic, the graces can come through us. In the poem, he receives the grace, but by writing the poem, he's the channel of the grace to us. It's one complete act. He has this vision, and he writes about it, and when he writes about it, after all these centuries, you heard me reciting it just exactly as he wrote it, and it's as if he's present to us, and he's channeling it to us. So I'm bringing this up so that you could appreciate yourself at this deeper level. And it's not always the graces probably came through in ways that you're not even aware of. It's not the special things you said, oh, I'm glad I gave him this advice. It may not even be in that category. It may be just some little turn of a phrase or a turn of your head or a wink that gave somebody something to live on, something to help him or her survive. I consider this the most beautiful feature of our topic. So the appreciation goes to ourselves also, not only to the people who've been channels to us, not only to the higher power, but also to ourselves for how grace let itself come through us and reach others. Any questions about this part or anything we've talked about so far? Everybody following? Okay. Good. Well, I'm glad we got to that part of our topic. And let me say just a word or two about the fear element. So sometimes we're afraid of what comes next. For instance, let's say all the kids leave home. Now you have the empty nest. And you're afraid of what life will be like at that point. Now most of us who have had this fear have easily let go of it when we thoroughly enjoyed the emptiness. But there has to be some way of working with the fear that comes up, because it's ultimately the fear of going on which is central to the whole concept of a journey of some kind. The archetype that is common to all of us, not only everybody here, but everybody on the whole planet, since all cultures, as Joseph Campbell helped us know, have the same story. It's the story of someone, a hero or heroine, who left where he or she was, went somewhere else, went through all kinds of struggles, and then came back bearing gifts, that is, graces. So if that's in us, if there's something in us that needs to do that, then going on would be central to it. And many of us have the fear of going on, so we stay stuck. Keep everything as it is, no matter how bad it is, because the alternative is to face something totally new. And so, now that we've been in this course, we realize the very first thing to ask for is the grace to go on. So it's, I ask for the grace to go on. And I want to combine this with the psychological way to do the work. So spiritually, I ask for the grace to go on, whatever the going on is for you in your life at the moment. And psychologically, we use our 3A approach. I've mentioned this before, but I'll mention it again quickly. I admit that I'm afraid to get on with my life to myself and to one other person whom I trust. That's step one. of the psychological way to work with the fear of going on. Secondly, instead of running away from the fear or trying not to feel it, I allow myself to feel the fear. I allow the feeling of fear. I'm not going to take a drink, take a drug, turn on the TV, find some way to avoid it. I'm just going to let myself feel it. And third is I'm going to act as if, as someone mentioned from the program, fake it until you make it. I'm going to act as if this fear of going on cannot prevent me from going on. So I will make whatever choices show that I'm going on rather than the choices that keep me stuck. So I'm acting as if, even though I don't feel ready for it, I'm going ahead and doing it anyway. It's not pretending. It's the cognitive behavioral state-of-the-art technique to get over your fear. It's not acting as in acting in a play. It's not that kind of acting. It's taking action. Taking action as one who's not afraid. That's act as if. But look at what we've done, thanks to our course. Instead of my presenting only steps 1, 2, 3, admit that I'm afraid to go on, allow myself to feel the fear, but take the actions that make it possible to go on. Instead of only having that to offer, we now have something spiritual to offer because of our course. And in addition to all this, I ask for the grace to go on. I consider this a powerful new realization that everything that the self-help movement teaches us, such as the threefold style of working with fear, is incomplete without our being conscious of the grace dimension that also can kick in. I can't make it kick in, but I can open to it and ask for it. Isn't this a wonderful realization? And so I'm alone when I'm doing steps 8, 1, 2, 3. Only I can admit, only I can allow, only I can act as if. But if more is happening from a spiritual perspective, I'm no longer alone, because look, I have something in me that is opening to the help, the grace, from a power beyond myself. I am in this challenge of going on more than just myself. There is something else that wants to help me. Why would something else want to help me? Because however we were made, or if we were made by someone, we definitely have it in us to make a journey of some kind. No one could deny that. No one in this room now was born in this room. Everybody came here from somewhere else. So your life is physically a journey from one place to another. Can't deny that. So if we were made this way, then it stands to reason that something wants to help us live out what we really are. And how do you live out what you really are? You do whatever it takes psychologically to get there. And since psychology won't get us there completely, you also remain conscious of a new possibility, which is that whatever made me the kind of being that needs to go on rather than stay stuck. Even if it's an evolutionary impulse in the universe rather than a person you can turn to. Rather than a good shepherd, it's a shepherding that the whole universe is performing. Even if it's that, I want to access that to help me do what I need to do. Does this make sense to everybody? It's a wonderful realization. It's a high point for me on this whole topic. Because finally you can see that what we ask for isn't out of nowhere. We're asking for something that's already built into us. And we'll never be fully ourselves until we get there. A simple example that I've sometimes used is this. Let's say your cousin lives in Scotland and he has a ranch, a sheep ranch. You go and visit this cousin and you enjoy being there on the sheep ranch. While you're there, one of his border collies has a litter. And of course they're so cute. And you're there for the 6 weeks or so. And you ask your cousin if you could have one of the litter, one of the little border collies. He says yes. You take this border collie and you go back home. You live in LA. And you give this border collie wonderful science diet. You make sure he gets all his shots. You hire the dog walker when you're at work. You take him out for a walk. You bring him with you on camping trips. You give this dog a wonderful life. He will go with the program, but he will feel always there's something missing. One day, you decide you're going to visit your cousin again. And, of course, now you and the dog are so attached. You bring him with you everywhere you go. You bring this dog with you back to Scotland. You go from the airplane. He picks you up at the airport. He drives you back to the ranch. You let your little dog out of the car. The minute his feet hit the earth and he sees the sheep and the other brothers and sisters, he heads straight to what he was born for. Then he knows what was missing. Because no matter what you gave him, it could never really fulfill him, because his total orientation and purpose in life has to do with shepherding. Everybody follow? So that is in us to go on a journey to move through life rather than be stuck. And no matter how nicely we treat ourselves, and no matter how we make sure we don't have to face too many challenges, no matter how good we are to ourselves, if we're not going on and opening to the grace to go on, there will always be something missing. Just like for the little dog. So our time is about up, but I just want to say thank you to everyone for your attention, and I've enjoyed doing the course. So good luck.